This is Japan Baseball Weekly. News, interviews, analysis, and your questions, all about NPB. And now your hosts, Johnny Gibson and Jim Allen.
Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast. It's for the week of April 1st. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a Sunday night, after all the games are done this weekend, is my buddy Jim Allen. What's happening, man?
No fooling. Really? April 1st? Okay. Right. Okay. I'm doing good. Yourself?
I'm hot. I'm actually hot. I don't know what happened. I was freezing a week ago, and now I'm hot.
Yeah, we went from winter to summer in 3 days. 72 hours. We were close to zero temperatures 72 hours ago, and today was shorts and t-shirts weather.
Yeah, I'm not complaining. I'm just surprised. All right, don't take any. Yeah, I know Michael Westby is sitting around thinking, you always complain when it's cold, and now it's warm, and now you're complaining. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying that was quick.
So what sounds like complaining is not.
Tell my wife.
Hashtag hi.
All right, on this week's show, we've got a chat with Lotte newcomer James Dykstra. We're going to look at opening weekend. We discuss a major rule change and close out things by offering our opinions on the Shohei Ohtani Ipe Mizuhara situation. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases.
Okay, well, March has come. Well, actually, March is going. March is gone. We'll be out of March pretty soon. But the baseball madness began in Kanto, in the Kanto area. I think the 4th or 5th of March, we started having games up here, preseason games. And I got to Yokohama Stadium the second day of the preseason up here. And I got to see, it was windy, it was cold, it was rainy. And I got to talk to James. I got to talk to a bunch of people. It looked like a complete and total bust, but it was not. It proved out. It was one of those days where you think everything's going wrong and then everything goes right.
So, I need one of those to come along.
You do. You get them. It's weird. It is so weird. It's like you think, if you think you're nothing's going to happen and you stay home, you miss a lot. Is the answer. I guess that's the reporter's thing. If you go, you run into all kinds of interesting things. And I ran into all kinds of interesting people and stories. And one of them was James Dykstra, who was on my list. And I, just as a preface, when I have somebody on my list, and the list is not too long that it doesn't take hours and hours and hours of work, I look through what their records are. And I looked at his records, and his ERAs weren't great, and his strikeouts to walks weren't great. And, you know, his overall, I'm going, why? And sorry, James, but why is this guy in Japan? And it was quite, you know, it was a puzzle to me. And I got to ask him, and I just got most original answers I've ever heard. Because typically the answer is, I'm pitching with a new shoulder because of shoulder surgery. I'm pitching with a new elbow because of Tommy John, or I had a hip replacement or whatever. But he gave us an answer we've never heard, and I think you're going to enjoy it. So let's take it away, James Dykstra.
Okay, our guest this week on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is a new Lotte Marines import pitcher, James Dykstra. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me.
It's a pleasure.
Some teammates that I met along the way.
Okay.
I was actually in Venezuela, not this offseason, but the offseason before, playing winter ball.
Okay.
And my teammate was Kenny Vargas.
Okay.
He played actually for this team a couple years ago. And we were just talking one day at lunch, and he was like, hey, you ever have interest in playing in Japan? Like, you'd be good in Japan. I was like, yeah, I would love to play in Japan. He's like, all right, perfect. Like, I'll give you, like, the international scouts number.
Cool.
Manabu. So I reached out to him, and then all year past last year, we just kind of kept in touch, and he followed me a little bit. And then at the end of the season last year, I went and did a workout for him.
Okay.
And off of that, him and my agent just started talking, and that's how I ended up here.
Yeah, and I'll be honest, when I look, first thing I'll do, I'll say, well, you know, who is this guy? How old is he? Yeah. What does he do? And I look at your numbers, and I go, It's not typically the track record we see people coming to MLB. So tell me, or to NPB, these major leagues.
Yeah.
So tell me, what's the story, and what has been, what in your mind has been holding you back from being the pitcher that you can be?
I think a lot of it is the past couple of years is, like, I've been bouncing around, like, Mexico and indie ball, and for me, it hasn't really been, like, numbers-based, basically, because over in America, it's more based on, like, getting picked up is more on, like, TrackMan data than it is, like, ERA and stuff like that. So that was mainly just the big focus in, like, indie ball and Mexico is – I don't really want to say that, like – I didn't really focus on, like, ERAs and numbers like that, but it was mainly more based on, like, how hard am I throwing, like, what kind of vertical break is my fastball getting, obviously, because that's what gets you picked up, and that's obviously the goal of not when you're not in affiliate ball is to get back to affiliate ball.
Sure.
So I think that was, like, the ERA and the stats from those past couple of years are kind of misleading just because, again, it's, like, it's – I want to get back to affiliate ball.
Okay.
So it's like you got to do what they're looking for
type
situation. But I think in the past, like when I'm in an affiliate ball and have that, I think I've had pretty good numbers.
Okay.
So I think that's going to be a reflection of how it's going to be here is that it's more like I know I'm going to be here for an entire year. It's not really like where am I going to be next month type situation. So that's a lot more comforting. And then also it's like since I know I'm going to be here all year, it's definitely more focused about winning where indie ball and stuff, like no one really cares about winning, like everyone just wants to get picked up, you know what I mean? So it's definitely a different mentality. Instead of it's like everyone wants to get picked up, it's now it's I'm here for the entire year, we're winning. So I think that's going to be a reflection of like my old numbers.
So fewer distractions.
Exactly. Well, it's not distractions, it's just like it's a different mindset now where it's like now my job is to go out there and get outs and win, where instead of like indie ball and stuff, my focus was I need to go out and get TrackMan data so I can send it to scouts so I can get picked up and get a job.
So let me ask, now you've been all over the world, it must be kind of an easier transition to Japan where new language, maybe you don't speak that well.
It's actually a easier transition now because I have a translator.
Okay.
That helps me out. Where in the past, when I've been to like Venezuela and Mexico, is you kind of just rely on hopefully a teammate speaks both languages and can help you out. But then when like you're on your own, you're out getting food, it's literally like you're on your phone, like Google Translate, like trying to hopefully matches up with how they interpret it. So it's actually a little bit easier here. And then also like I said, like since I've been around, like going out on my own, like I kind of know how it's gonna be. Instead of like when I first went to Mexico, I was really lost about like I don't know where like how to get around or how to do anything on my own type situation.
So what has been any kind of pleasant surprises about Japan?
Yeah, I mean, I did a lot of research before I came over here. I talked to, like, old teammates that I know that have played over here and got, like, their information out of them. But just it's a really beautiful country. It's very clean. Everyone's incredibly nice, which is nice to see coming from America. But that and just the food. The food's unbelievably good.
Okay. That's a pretty standard one. Hopefully the – let me ask, because I don't know how we talk a lot about the mounds in Japan because they tend to be varied. A lot of the teams are using black stick like they do in the States, and a lot of them aren't. And so you'll go one day where you pretty much got to do archaeology and groundskeeping on your own to get the mound. How was the mound situation in the spring training?
Our spring training site wasn't bad.
Okay.
This is my first game like in an actual stadium here, and the mound was pretty good, even though it was cold and rainy. So towards the end of the game, it got a little sticky to the cleats, but overall, I think it was good. I've noticed a trend here that I think they should start putting in America is that the rubber It's like the actual rubber, and then in front where you put your foot is there's another rubber pad. So it's like it has dirt on top of it, but it doesn't create a giant holes because the rubber stops
there's
it.
There's a subplate on there. Yeah,
which I think is an ingenious concept. Was I think more places should start doing that.
Okay. All right. Okay, it was great to have you on, and hopefully wish you the best for the season. Stay healthy, and good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you, James. Sorry we didn't start with a question. I think I got a little slow on the microphone. I was slow on the microphone button in Yokohama, so I got to record him after I asked the question.
Oh, okay. All right.
So, anyway, not James, but John. The person in the podcast whose name also begins with a J.
I know. There's so many J's flying around here.
I know.
Yeah, thank you. What a nice, just a fun chat. And I surmise that you know exactly where I'm going with this because you've been talking to me and you know that I listen to these things and I pick up. I mean, this one was obvious. And like you said, you talked about it. You prefaced it by saying we got an answer that you had never heard before. But long time ago on the show, I think I said something to the effect of, you know, you're not a good pitcher because you go out and learn how to put more spin on your pitches. Good pitchers have a lot of spin. And it's not like if you go out and have more rotation that you're going to be a better or more successful pitcher. So to hear James say, well, you know, don't look at those stats. I was not pitching for competitive reasons. I was pitching to put up stats that get tracked so that I could get a job. And it's no surprise to me that the numbers are not good. I didn't look at his numbers. I was going to, but I didn't have time to actually go back and check on all the numbers. But, you know, you're pitching for data and not trying to win. And in fact, he stated, I'm not quoting, but he stated something to the effect of, you know, nobody was trying to win. Everybody was just trying to put up stats.
Yep.
And so they could get a job. And I don't want to call it cutthroat, because obviously there's a manager and he's out there to do what's best for the team because he's the only one who's guaranteed. I mean, that's not even true, right? A manager might be able to get a managerial gig. So I take that back, bite my tongue. But those guys tend to stay there. And so they know they're going to be around the team a little bit longer, but how much can they enforce? Hey, look, I want you to do this and I want you to do that. And I want you to do this so we can win games. And everybody's out there ignoring you. Say, man, we're trying to get paid out here. I'm not listening to you. So that really, again, what you said was something I had really never heard. But when you think about it, and that's another reason why I don't trust preseason games, because so many people have varying agendas, even agendas that contradict each other. Sometimes trying to work on something and other guys trying to get a job. And it's just, you know, you can't tell. Even sometimes during the season, which is what I talked about when we had the last, I guess it was a year ago, roundtable meeting with Trey Hillman and Dan Evans and Aaron Guile. And I said, look, there are some guys, you know, especially at major league levels, but there's some guys who, like, they're veteran guys. They get paid a lot of money. They've been in the organization a while. You have to play them. You know, you're stuck playing them. You can't, like, sit them down or anything. And as a manager, you come in and you're like, well, I don't want to play this guy. I don't, you know, he doesn't jive with the way I want to do things. But he's part of the organization. You just got to play him. So there are lots of agendas going on there. So it's great to hear someone like James talk about that. And I can't wait to meet him and talk more about it because it was fascinating to me. What about you?
Well, I think that was the look because, you know, we have in school, they talk about, you know, teaching for knowledge, teaching so you learn things, or teaching for the test. You know, this is sort of like the baseball equivalent of teaching for the test. You're not trying to succeed. You're trying to pass the test.
Mm-hmm.
And there is something to that psychology that I've discovered in my conversations with scouts the past 4 or 5 years. One of the top scouts for one MLB team told me, I'm not a big believer in just velocity.
Mm-hmm.
I want to see the shape of the pitches. I want to see what they do with the pitches. I want to see all this, and I want to see command and feel. But if you can sign a guy who can throw 100 miles an hour, and he couldn't hit the sky.
That's a new one.
You know, he could hit the ground if he was standing over it.
But he throws 100.
Right.
And exactly. He's got a good spin rate.
Exactly. Well, if he can throw 100, you sign him, not because you ever think he's going to be able to play, but because some dumber team will sign him because, well, if he can throw 100, we can teach him how to pitch.
Dumber team.
And we use these guys as currency. They're monopoly money. You know, so they get nothing for the guy who can't do anything, and then they include him in a trade for somebody. He's the pitcher to be named later, so to speak. So anyway, so that was interesting. I liked the comp. So it was a real microscope on, you know, microscopic look at life in today's minors. So of course, 20 years ago, none of it was, geez, have a good spin rate and have good launch angle.
No.
Now it's everywhere.
Yeah. You can't get so away from really, it.
No, you cannot. And I think it's actually made it worse because, I mean, when you, in the big picture of minor league baseball, I mean, if you looked at minor league baseball 120 years ago when Babe Ruth was pitching for the Baltimore Orioles.
Just the other day, 120 years ago.
Hey. Let me tell you that when I was that my I am how can I say this my the date of my birth was closer to the start of the Spanish-American War than I am to the date of my birth now.
Oh boy! All right.
So let's not. Yeah, it wasn't that long ago. Anyway, so about 120 years ago, what I'm trying to say is that when Babe Ruth was pitching for the minor league Baltimore Orioles. The minor leagues then were like the Japanese leagues. They were trying to win because they were trying to make money. They were trying to sell tickets and concessions and,
sure.
and doing that. And the idea of you have to play in the majors was, it was not a farm team in any way, shape or form. The purpose was to win ball games and not get better to be so you could sell them.
Sure.
And Lefty Grove pitched for a long time in Baltimore, and the owner Jack Dunn wasn't going to sell him because he was winning, making money for him. who wasn't there to, you know, get a posting fee? So that's the way baseball used to work. And now it's the minor league teams are basically, as Bill James once put it, colonies, colonies for foreign powers. You know, the local fans are watching. Although the baseball itself is fun because baseball is fun and guys are trying to win games because winning games is fun and they're trying hard to be better because that's their job. But it's still a little bit like going and watching farmers raise chickens so that other people can eat them. Nothing to do with, you know, so that's what he said. You know, the minor league teams are, you know, MLB teams keep minor league teams like for the same reason farmers keep chickens. So it's not a lot of fun, but that's the truth. So anyway, but I thought that was interesting. So that whole process has devolved another step with the advanced metrics. I'm a fan of metrics, but I'm also a fan of knowledge. And it's not always about studying for the test. Learning to win is a skill. Learning the little things you need to win is really important. It's not just about spin. I mean, I don't mean to belittle.
Sure. No, true. James it's Dykstra so true.
Because if you're in James Dykstra's shoes, it makes 100%. It makes 100% sense. It's good sense to show that you have the tools that an MLB team is going to want. That's absolutely fundamental. If you don't pass that test, you're going to be learning how to win in independent ball for the rest of your life.
True. It's all true. Yeah.
It makes perfect sense. And it's not his fault. It's the system's fault in my mind. So, but I thought that was absolutely riveting. And it was great fun talking to him. He was very open and friendly. So yeah, best of luck and making adjustments now that you're in a situation where winning is really the only thing that matters.
Yeah.
So yeah, go for it. I mean, just you know, let it rip and see how, you know, see what adjustments you can make. So I'm wishing you well.
Yeah. So am I, and hopefully get to talk to him soon and get out there and see Neftali Soto as well. And Gregory Polanco. Yeah, yeah.
I think I'm going to wait till they come to a closer ballpark since I...
Makes sense.
Yeah. Well, and also, basically, if possible, I don't ever want to go to Chiba again.
Well, Cebu is much more reporter-friendly, so we'll keep...
Yeah, well, that is absolutely the reason. And even as a visiting team, it's easier because you don't have to go through a maze and, like, that whole
scene. Yes.
Yeah, circumnavigating the stadium to get to something that used to take 30 seconds to get.
Yeah, I'm with you. All right, okay. Well, let's move along and talk about the Lotte Marines very quickly. And it was Rocking with Roki Day on Sunday here. And yeah, I kind of got caught off guard. I knew he was pitching up until, I mean, I saw it the previous day when they were announced, but it didn't strike me that I needed to watch this game. And I'm just so caught up in Duki Watarai of the Bay Stars. I wanted to watch this game. And, so Sasaki threw today. So he got game three for the Marines and he went five innings. He wasn't great. I didn't watch a lot of the game. I had it on, but again, my attention was on the big screen. That was on the TV at the office, was the Bay Stars and the Carp. And so I didn't see a lot of the actual pitches and the conversations that he had with batters, but the numbers were that he threw over five innings, he threw 95 pitches, and that wasn't good. And he had one bad inning, and you say a bad inning for Sasaki, it's an inning in which he allows a run. So, but he allowed six hits. He struck out seven, walked one run in over those five innings. And then he got word that he was coming out from, I think it was Yoshi. I saw the highlights too. I don't remember it was Yoshi, but he got word that he was coming out. Now, you know how the sumo wrestlers are not really allowed to show emotion, whether they win, lose, or whatever it is. It was something similar to that, in that he wanted to show some frustration, but he knew the cameras were on him as he went to pick up his things off of the bench in the dugout. And so he calmed himself down a little bit as he looked like he was going to angrily pick them up off of the bench or snatch them off of the bench. And he slowed his hand down and gently pulled his things off of the bench. But it just seemed like there was a little bit of frustration there. And I remember saying in the preseason, look, it's time to take the kid gloves off this guy, especially if he's not going to be around next year, and let's see him throw. So maybe there's something going on that he needs to ramp up. I hadn't really heard about a lot of injuries. I didn't really pay attention, though, in the offseason here and in the preseason here, but maybe he's got something going on, so they wanted to. I mean, 95 pitches is a lot, but we know that last year it was around 100 that he was coming out all the time. So that's close. And it was five innings. So you might as well start with a fresh pitcher.
Yeah, He was a little slow in the preseason. He didn't, you know, I think last year he was like the first pitcher out of the chute leading up to opening day. He was the first guy in the, you know, let's see who's going to be in our starting rotation, because they wanted to get him reps in the preseason. And this year it was like he wasn't getting reps. I think he only made two starts in the preseason.
Yeah, I haven't seen much of him. So maybe he's slow out of the gates this season. Okay, yeah. Whatever's going on. But so, yeah, I saw a few the pitches. I mean, he picked on Chusei Mannami, struck him out a couple times on pitches out of the zone, got him to chase. And, you know, he gave up a run. He had the bases loaded and nobody out and got a double play ball. That's how the run scored. So, again, he didn't get the win. They ended up losing this game 3-2, two runs in the ninth inning. The Fighters rallied to win the game. And so they win, the Fighters do, they win the series. So it was a fun series to watch, that's for sure. And we are going to talk about the opening weekend, but since neither one of us really was paying attention to this game in how we usually do Rocking with Roki, that's
I know.
It.
Yeah, we're still, I'm still in, I'll be honest, I'm still kind of in preseason mode. So
No, you and me both. It's not like, you know, I wasn't excited. And I thought I told you, I let the fans in on this one. I was planning, I had taken off March 29th, and I said, I'm just going to go to opening day kind of as a fan and watch a game. So I either go to Jingu or I'll go to Tokyo Dome. And I think I told you I was going to go to either one of those places. Well, wifey sees that I have a day off on the calendar, and she couldn't figure out, she couldn't put one and one together, much less one and two or one and anything. And she's like, oh, she planned a day. She planned a trip. And so I wake up on Thursday and she said, oh, by the way, we're leaving at 9 o'clock tomorrow morning to go to Legoland with the kids. And I'm like, no, I'm going to the game. Suffice to say, I really enjoyed Legoland.
Yeah, ain't that the way?
Oh, I missed opening day.
Hey, tell me about it. What did you say you had tomorrow off? I says, yes.
Don't say it. That's the thing. Just write it on a calendar. Don't say it. She can wake up one morning and say, you know what? I'm not going to work. Screw those people. Then she has no time to plan.
That's the Wayne Grassick in you talking.
All right.
Remember that one? Hey, skip that work stuff. Come to the ballpark. Tell him to buzz off. Wayne, miss you, buddy.
Bless you, Wayne. Bless you, Wayne. All right. Well, let's make a seamless transition then and talk about this series really quickly. The Fighters end up winning the series 2-1. They had a chance to do some damage today. They just, you know, they kept wasting opportunities, but like I said, the final score 3-2, and they came back off the closer. Now, I don't know if you probably didn't see any of this game. In the ninth inning, a ball's hit to the gap in right center, and Koshiro Wada, who's playing center field, the really speedy center fielder, and Koki Yamaguchi, I think not an outfielder by trade.
Yeah.
They're going after this ball, and they end up kind of colliding. They hit the ball. It goes off of both their gloves. And this ball is scored as a triple. Now, Jim Allen, why? Because that's a ball. It should have been caught. They both had an opportunity to catch it. Neither one ceded to the other. And so that's why they kind of bumped into each other. And that's why the ball was on the ground. Well, why does the pitcher have to take responsibility for their garbage?
Because they're both Japanese.
Yeah, you're right, because if it's a foreign pitcher, that certainly would automatically be a hit.
No, if one of the outfielders was not Japanese, then there would be an error on the play.
Okay, all right. Well, I've been complaining about this for years. An infielder flinches and lets a ball play him and gets an error, and an outfielder can go back, forth, sideways, and do a flip out there and not catch the ball, and it goes as a hit. I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't like it. And then here's the guys both getting the ball, a glove on the ball. But anyway, Chusei Manami also threw a runner out at the plate. Now, not a fast runner, but it was Polanco. But yeah.
Yeah,
I still love to see him watching him play. And it was a good series. The Marines look fine. Atsuki Tanichi was the guy who won the game. And I heard someone else mention, I think maybe it was a Pro Yaku News special, I can't remember, but they said the same thing that I had said before the season started, which was that Tanichi is a Sawamura Award caliber pitcher this year, and they are expecting him to compete for that. So am I, quite frankly. So,
well, that I'll tell you, one of those games, they were playing against Europe, but one of those games he was playing, the pitches that were coming out of his hand against the Europe team, they were playing in March. I'm going, those guys might have been from Spain and Germany and the Czech Republic, but if they were playing for the Boston Red Sox, they would have walked back to the dugout too.
Yeah. He looks good. He threw six scoreless innings in the middle game on Saturday. So let's turn to the Buffaloes and the Hawks, and that was a fun series. Now all the Pacific League series went 2-1. And so the Fighters won that series. The Hawks won their series with the Buffaloes, and the Lions won their series with the Eagles. I thought with the Buffaloes,
they were lucky to get a win.
Well, yeah, but they played that middle game was strong for them. So I wasn't. I mean, you're right, because they only scored two runs, and they scored them both in the same inning.
And on one of the very few bad pitches that Levon Moinello threw in eight innings.
Yeah.
I mean, it wasn't that bad of a pitch. It was just was a terrible location, and he was looking for a fastball 2-0, and he didn't get all of it, but he got enough of it. So after the game, they asked manager Satoshi Nakajima, "Well, you cashed in the one chance." He said, "What chance? We didn't have a single chance the whole game. What are you talking about?"
Hey, we had a guy on base and hit a ball, and that was about it. That's not necessarily a chance.
Right.
But I did like the Buffalo's newcomers.
Oh, yeah.
Anderson Espinosa. Yeah. And flame throwing Andres Machado. That guy, he probably doesn't have great control.
Quote from Nakajima. He threw 100. He pitched 162, and he says, "I don't know. I think our stadium's radar gun's buggy."
Yes. He thought it was far harder than what you're saying. It looked harder, but I mean, one of them he threw, and I sent it back the other way. So I think both of them look like they'll be contributors this season.
Yeah,
it's a marathon.
I saw them in this preseason, and they had really good stuff, both of them. So
yeah, it's a marathon, so I'm not going to get overexcited at this moment, but they looked good, and especially Machado. I'm not sure about his control. We'll have to see how that plays out throughout the season. But he's not afraid to use that fastball, and he was either moving it a lot or he didn't have much command, and it was going wherever it wanted to, one or the other, but he got the outs, and you know, I'm not going to get distracted by a rabbit jumping out in front like that with a guy throwing real hard and say, "Oh, that's going to be good." I'm just going to wait. But I liked their contributions. But again, they lost the series to the Hawks, who looked, in my opinion, you better get them now. Don't let them get a running start at this thing, or you won't be able to get them, because they look pretty good, especially Moinello. To me, yeah, it looked like it was a long time coming.
Yeah, I'll tell you, that game was the thing that game turned on to me, really, was an 0-2 pitch to Yuma Tongu in the fifth inning.
And this is Saturday. Yeah,
this is Saturday. 0-2 pitch. He's retired 12 straight. He's got Tongu, who badly missed a changeup to strike out in the second inning. And then he badly missed a changeup to go down 0-1 in the fifth inning. Then he throws a fastball for a strike, or I think he fouled, I don't remember, but it's 0-2, and he threw a fastball that was half over the plate. But when you throw an 0-2 pitch, it's really got to be down the middle if you're going to get a called strike. And so he had him struck out, but he got another shot, and he grounded it. He smashed it the third changeup he saw in the day. He got enough on it to get it through past short for a single, and that proved to be a big run.
Tongu, he got hit by a pitch too, and over this week. I don't remember which game it was, but I think he's going to be okay. But again, you know, the Buffaloes are going to have to push for their wins, but I think they're going to bounce back. And
the third game, which I did not see, was very much like Roki Sasaki's start was my other guy's Carter Stewart.
Our other guy, yes.
Yeah.
Friend of the program, so, yes.
Yeah. Five innings, only 75 pitches, three walks, three strikeouts, one hit, one run. He gave up a home run. He walked two guys and gave up a sacrifice fly. That was the lone run he allowed.
Yeah, and again, I didn't. My head was in the stars.
Yeah, and Adam Walker homered, drove in two runs. So well done.
Looks like a good pickup for the Hawks. So they're coming out. Like I said, don't let them get a running start. You won't be able to catch them.
And Hotaka Yamakawa drove in the winning run in Friday. So the two of their new guys did all the damage this weekend, basically.
Yeah, and Yoya Kurihara also looks good and healthy, and he's going to be a plus for them. So they're going to, again, as long as they stay healthy and they get if they get too much of a running start here, it's going to be tough to catch them. But I like what I saw from the Hawks. So let's move to the Central League, where the defending Japan Series or reigning Japan Series champion Hanshin Tigers went 25.2 innings without scoring a run.
Yeah.
That is not a good way. But look, I think I called this one. I know I called this one in the preseason prediction show. I said, look, I think they're going to stumble out of the blocks. But they went smack. They face planted out of the blocks. But again, they won this game today 5-0. They had gotten shut out, what was it, 2-0 and 5-0 in the first two games. And so they come back and they don't get swept. And I think that's a big thing for them, not getting swept. And they got runs. They were about to be shut out for three consecutive games. Three consecutive games to start a season. And I think that was unprecedented. But they came, they scored the three runs. It was Shota Morishita who hit a home run in the eighth inning. So it was actually 7.2 innings today.
Yeah, two guys I really liked. Hiroto Saiki threw six scoreless innings for the Tigers. And Rei Takahashi, who he was the one of the two guys the Giants got for Adam Walker. So
yeah. And that was a fun game. It's nice to see Shinosuke Abe come out. Again, I'm going to be looking at his demeanor and everything, but come out with the wins. But he didn't look thrilled. He looked like that kind of pressure that I think Tatsunori Hara, his predecessor, had talked about often, which was, look, when you know Hara's father gave him the advice, when you get into bed, go to sleep, and don't think about baseball. If you have something you want to think about, get up and go sit at a table and think about it. But when you go to bed, just go to sleep. It looks like Abe's not taking that advice. He's not thrilled. He was happy that they won, but it was more the look on his face, having seen him for all these many years, was more of just kind of relief than the thrill of victory. To me, that's how I looked at it. But okay. That's how I took it. So anyway, so they won 2 out of 3, the Giants did. And Shohei Togo, he wins his first opening day start on Friday. And then the next day, Foster Griffin, 6.1 shutout innings for him. He looks good again. And
he beat a team that wasn't the Tigers. So that's kind of new.
They were the Tigers.
He beat a team that wasn't the Dragons. I think half his wins last year came against the Dragons.
I think half the league could say that. But anyway.
probably.
I think, there was one interesting fact. The Giants, having shutouts in their first two games of the season, that was the first time since 1941 that had happened. So wow. my dad was one. Not even, because my dad was born in October, so he wasn't even one yet. He was born October 1940. So moving along to where my head was a lot of the weekend, because I'll tell you why. I'm going to be honest. Yes, the Dragons wanted to draft Ryuki Watarai, and they were one of two other teams, or one of three teams that tried. I believe it's three teams that tried to draft.
That's correct. I don't remember. I couldn't tell you which ones they were, except one of them wasn't Cebu.
Yeah, and they missed him on the draft. And I complained to Jim that day. I said, "The Dragons can the only team that strikes out, you know, when whether they're in season or not, they learn how to strike out and get shut out, and that's what happened there." And of course, Watarai had a great preseason and had a great opening.
Hey, the Dragons pulled the winning lot, you know, to get Akira Neo, and they pulled the winning lot to get Donoe.
Hey, man,
the guy that the Giants failed to get, so they've had to suffer through Hayato Sakamoto all these years.
Whatever, man. I'm talking about, why you want to bring up old stuff? I'm just talking about happened last year. Yeah,
I'm a history guy. Old stuff is, my brain lives in the past.
But yeah, and the Bay Stars played really well. Watarai, he played well in the series. Obviously, he became the first Central League player to hit home runs, first Central League rookie.
Yeah, and you have to rephrase that, the first year player.
Yeah, fresh rookie or first year rookie to hit home runs in the first two games in a season. That was in the Central League. He was the third overall in Japan. It was the first time in 64 years a Yokohama rookie had hit a homer on opening day. The next day he goes 4-for-4. You know, he hits this home run that is a laser line drive. And I think, because I thought it was going to hit the wall. Four or five steps out of the dugout, he's raising his hand. And I'm like, why are you raising your hand, man? And this ball is just, you know, screaming at some poor kid in the right field seats who's running for cover. And he just looks good. He got hit in the head area. I think it ended up hitting him on the shoulder.
Ticked
his shoulder. This was on Saturday. On Saturday.
My first impression was it hit him in the ear flap, but it came off his shoulder.
Yeah.
And but that's okay, because actually it's the head area is the definition of a quote unquote dangerous pitch that requires an automatic ejection for the pitcher. So Hiroshima lost their starting pitcher after three pitches.
Yeah, on Saturday, which was but again, what did I show them?
Should have scored four runs, but you know what, you can't. Can't win them all.
You're trying. Anyway, Otarai went hitless in five at-bats today, but he's hitting .385. Of course, we're talking, three games, so let's not get too excited. Also, good to see Tyler Austin out there scoring runs, getting hits, contributing, playing defense. Love that. Hopefully, we'll get him on the show again this year as well. And then there's the Dragons. Now, they tied on Saturday. A 1-1 tie. And Dragons Land, that's a win. Because they didn't lose.
And they scored the first run in the first two games. They scored the first run of the season, the Dragons.
I wasn't paying close enough attention. So I thought it was the first run of the season, but now I was gonna tweet it, but I didn't have time to look through every other game. And so I'm like, well, whatever. Congratulations, gentlemen. You got a run, but you also got zero wins. So and they look different. They look like they're going to be a little bit more competent, but I say that, and then Hideaki Wakui, who notched his 2000th strikeout on Saturday, becoming the 24th pitcher in MPP to reach that mark, had a typical game that he experienced last year, which was he's pitching really well for his 20th. Last year was 19th year, but a veteran in almost two decades, and this year two decades. And he's pitching his heart out, and they can't competently put any offense on the field for him, and they can't score a run. So he walks away with nothing. He started the game with nothing. He walked away with nothing. More often than not last year, they got losses. I think I heard somebody saying that the Dragons had four pitchers with, you know, double digits of losses. And I'm like, they're lucky they didn't have 12. I mean, it's amazing. So,
that would have been hard. They can't lose 120 games, John.
Yeah, that's true. That's true.
They could, technically.
Anything's possible. That's Kevin Garnett. I started thinking, okay, it's again, I cannot root. There's so much ambivalence here. I cannot actively root for Sho Nakata. I just cannot look at him in the uniform of the team I love. And there he is hitting a couple home runs. And I'm like, will you hurry up and strike out so they'll send you to the farm, is what I'm thinking. So the one guy I'm not rooting for is the one guy who's got two home runs already and he's actually producing. And the guys I am rooting for are just kind of out there. And I mean, I don't know who's batting worse right now. Seiya Hosokawa or Shohei Ohtani. One of the guys, I guess it's Hosokawa because he doesn't have hardly any hits at all. At least Ohtani's getting a couple singles here and there. So I don't know, man.
This series did produce, I think, so far the play of the season, which was with the bases, no outs and the bases loaded in the ninth inning. And well, first of all, just to preface this, the Dragons took a 3-2 lead into the eighth inning on Friday.
They're precious and little leads that they try to doctor and nurse and nourish and then make it grow up into a win.
Okay, well, the Dragons really had two problems last year. They had one massive Mount Rushmore-sized problem, which was the offense. And then they had a kind of flash flood problem, which was the defense. It really wasn't very good overall. I mean, it was... They have some good fielders. They have a couple of really good fielders, but the overall defense was not good.
I think they started gradually sacrificing the notion of defense to try to drum up some offense, and that didn't even work. The guys who were supposed to hit couldn't hit. Or didn't. Yeah, well, I shouldn't say couldn't hit, but they didn't hit.
So the fifth inning fell up. The Swallows' eighth inning rally basically was because of poor pitching, poor catching, poor fielding. Yeah. So that happened.
Poor fans. Ended up,
yeah. Poor fans, indeed. Poor John. So, okay. So the Swallows score five in the eighth, and the game looks like it's done. And then Kazuto Taguchi comes on as the closer because it's opening day and they want to win the game. And he was really bad. And he's got the bases loaded, nobody out. And Nakata drives a ball to the wall that new Swallow. How can you call Haruki Nishikawa new for anything? But he's a new Swallow. And he goes up and he catches the ball. He robs. It looks like he robs Nakata of a bases loaded double. It probably two runs because there was a runner on first. And it turns out to be a sacrifice fly. He catches it. And then when he hits the warning track, the ball pops out of his glove. Except Yasutaka Shiomi standing over him. And he said, I was waiting to make the relay throw because I saw he was going to hit the deck and I was going to need to make the relay throw. So he's waiting for the ball and it popped up to him and he made the out. He caught it.
Oh, I just saw that play. I just thought it was, I thought he tossed it. It to him.
Nope. The ball bounced out of his glove when he hit the turf and it bounced into Shiomi's hands for the out. And then
I didn't realize
it became a sacrifice fly. And the other two runners scampered back to their bases.
I didn't realize that. All right. Well,
yeah. I had the chance to talk to Shiomi yesterday and he was, I said, you know, it's really good that you're paying attention. He says, I was only paying attention because I thought I had to make a relay throw. If I didn't have to make a relay throw, that would have been a double.
Well, I mean, Yahoo has it as a fly out to left. So they're giving the credit to.
Indeed. Well, they do that sometimes. Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Well, yeah, fun times again. Like I said, a tie is a win in Dragon's Land. So they're the only team of the 12 teams that has no wins after the first weekend. But anyway, let's make a four-seam transition. And there has been a major rule change.
Yeah, an MLB major rule change.
Yeah, so it's a real challenge, I guess, to sift through a lot of things that are going on in baseball, but Jim alerted me to this story, and it's a bit of a game changer. Major League Baseball basically sent out a cease and desist order on Free Love. So tell us about it, Jim.
Yeah, this story was original. Unlike my day job, I can give credit to the people who broke the story originally. It's not a thing in Japan. Japanese news agencies do not want to say anybody got the story in Japan before them. So, so a little aside is if you want to say, oh, so-and-so reported a story and it's as news because it's going around, you have to wait in Japan. You have to wait until an overseas, either you confirm it yourself through your own sources or an overseas outlet. We can say an overseas outlet broke the story. So let's say Nikon Sports, as in this case, breaks the story and another Japanese news agency won't touch it until that Nikon Sports story is picked up in America. And then they can say an American news agency broke it because you can't say anything nice about your rivals in Japan. It's sort of a rule. Anyway, right. So Nikon Sports broke it and somebody posted, I think it was Yaku Cosmopolitan posted it on Twitter and he said, Jim Allen, what do you think? And I thought, well, I don't know. So I started asking people and everybody said, oh, yeah, this happened in March. And then I happened to see the document. I saw the email. Somebody showed me the email.
Mm-hmm.
And I went, whoa, this is interesting. So basically MLB, I'll tell you what it is. MLB has ordered all teams to terminate. The word used was dissolve. Their working agreements, formal or informal, with Japanese, Korean, Taiwan, and Mexican Taiwan and Mexico teams from just the big four leagues, not their winter leagues. So Taiwan winter leagues are okay, but those working agreements, which have been extremely beneficial to Japanese teams. I mean, Yeah, some teams, yes, some teams, no. But in terms of the knowledge base of Japanese teams getting to send coaches to work in the minor leagues in America, has been huge in the terms of how these guys get to see different ways of doing things and get to talk to different kinds of players and add to their toolbox and way of thinking. And because of that, we have guys like Satoshi Nakajima, who I think he spent 2 years when he was a fighter's coach, technically working as a minor league instructor for the San Diego Padres. And Akinori Otsuka, you know, the Dragons, the one good thing they had going for them last year was their pitching, and their pitching coach from last year was Akinori Otsuka, who was for 3 years the pitching coach at AAA El Paso for the San Diego Padres.
One of the pitching coaches,
correct. So he is one of the, and he was one of the guys in El Paso. Okay, so to be precise, he was at least one of the guys. We don't know how many. But, and yes, they have Eiji Ochiai there as well, to be fair. But he's been around for a long time. Anyway, so the point being, those arrangements that allowed for coaching exchanges are now no longer available to Japanese teams. If the Japanese guy wants to go coach in America, he can't be working for a Japanese team. He's got to be on his own. He's got to be, you know, free agent, basically. And I talked to Otsuka the other day, and he said, yeah, this is not good at all. He says, I learned so much, you know, attending major league meetings and going to major league spring training and talking to players and talking to coaches, how they do it, how they think. It was really, it was a game changer to some degree for him, although he had pitched in MLB. And he had played in the minors, so he knew things, but seeing it from a coach's side was really big. So that's the rule. Now, here's the reason for the rule. Tampering is going on.
Really? I'm shocked.
I know.
As long as the Fighters and Texas Rangers have exchanged players over the years.
Tampering is going on.
I'm shocked.
Tampering may be going on. But we'll let you finish talking to that player before we do this thing over here. So now I was not aware. And you see, 15 years ago, you'd see MLB scouts on the field. But about 10 years ago, apparently the rules in Japan, they'd be on the field before the game, talking to players, talking to coaches and whatnot. Now they are stuck in the stands and they are not permitted to talk to players. That's the rule.
Sure.
Okay. But apparently the problem from MLB's point is not the tampering that's going on, but it's the appearance that tampering might be going on through via these working agreements. So these agreements, and Kenichi Uemoto, it's kind of mean to say this. I asked. Iwamoto is Nippon Ham Fighters International Director.
Okay.
I asked him. I asked him if you had heard anything about MLB teams talking to any of your players, because one of the Japanese people I talked to for the story said, "Yeah, we can't keep this team's scouts away from our players." And so I asked him, he said, dude, who would want any of our players?
Hashtag
I'm joking. Iwamoto-san did not say that, but he said, like, you know, we don't have these big name players that people are going to be all over. I think was what he was saying, but he was a little bit, you know, we don't have.
Ohtani's gone, man. What are we talking about here?
Those days are over. But he said the relationship with the Texas Rangers that they had allowed Randy Smith to be an assistant to the general manager of the Nippon Ham Fighters, like a vice president, and an Asian scout for the Texas Rangers. I haven't heard back from Randy. I saw him in Nashville and I said hi and that was it. But apparently, you know, he's got to do one or the other. He can't do both anymore. So these exchanges are gone because MLB, in my opinion, wants to say it's doing something about tampering.
Yeah, look, it's doing something, all right?
Yeah. we're stopping it. We're getting, you know, it's really, I mean, the thing, we're shocked that it's going on. It's very much like the movie Casablanca.
Casablanca, you know, is what,
where he says round up the usual suspects. we're not going for the truth. We're not going for the problem. Just, you know, we're round up the people we think who might have done it.
Yeah. Well, I you alerted me to this. I thought, I guess the first thing I thought, well, what kind of impact is this actually going to have? So we have had coaches go to the States. We have had players go to the States. We see for ourselves that the Texas Rangers and the Fighters seem to have, like I said, that's why I phrased it, to free love.
I think the Rangers had a couple of minor league coaches in the Fighters spring training camp this year.
Yeah, so I know the Eagles had some arrangements with some teams and get some of their players some experience in the Fall League. I think it was Arizona Fall League. So a lot of things are going on, but okay. Yeah, you can stop. You can keep. I mean, how do you keep the kids from hooking up? It's basically what I want to say. Yeah. The teams are going to hook up. So you're right. It's the appearance that they're doing something, but is it actually going to be effective?
No. Because I'll tell you, so the teams, I think the teams that are most taught, well, people kept saying, pointing at the Padres for some reason. I don't know why, but. Because of something AJ Preller said at the winter meetings, we're interested in a guy, you know, we like the guy, but we can't talk anything. You know, I don't know if they, but one of the teams people were talking about on the internet, but the teams, as far as I know, and the Padres do have a relationship with the Chinichi Dragons, or at least they did until last year. I don't know if they still do, but the scouts don't need a working agreement to go in and talk to the players. If they're going to talk to them, and they're going to go have dinner with them, nothing about a working agreement makes that easier. Or, you know, nothing about not having working agreements is going to stop that. So it's basically, like I said, they're just saying, round up the usual suspects. We're not interested in whether we get the guy or not. We just got to pretend like we're doing something. And MLB is pretending like it's doing something. And the Japanese teams are going to, and I think, and to some degree, MLB teams are going to suffer. Not because they're not going to be able to tamper, but because they'll have fewer chances of talking about how Japanese coaches address problems
and
learning from them.
Yeah, and I think the whole international exchange aspect of having coaches come over, especially when Japan wins the WBC a third time, having the Japanese coaches come over and explain, well, this is how we do things, and this is how what we're looking at, and we know it's the same game, but this is our approach, and getting that worldview of the game that hurts. It's, you know, they talk about growing the game. You hear Rob Manfred talk about growing the game, and then they chop legs off or limbs off.
Rob Manfred's idea of growing the game is putting a team in Las Vegas that nobody wants. And selling out their fans to gambling. Yeah. Hey, we're growing the game. All that matters is the bottom line.
Yeah, growing the game. All right. Well, good luck with that, MLB. And we'll be watching.
Cromartie talked to Trey Hillman, talked to a few other people. They basically, Warren Cromartie and Trey Hillman said exactly the same thing that you said. They should be thinking about how we can make baseball around the world bigger and better. And they're thinking, how can we make it smaller for our own best interest?
Yep. Great minds, baby.
Okay.
All right. And making a two-team transition, and we'll close out with this. Now, normally we leave the big league guys to other entities, and we don't really, once the players graduate and go to the States, I might comment once in a while about them and say something great, but then we just leave the U.S. press to handle, or the U.S., the North American press and media to deal with our Japanese players and take care of them and hope that they, you know, help develop them into great players who can go on and keep the game of baseball international, unlike what MLB is doing. But anyway, obviously we didn't comment on Shohei Ohtani's situation last week. We had our prediction show, but I think you and I have been personally on this show commenting about Ohtani longer than anyone in English, because we had been doing it since he was almost probably before the draft.
Yep.
So,
well, the first one I read, yeah, indeed, before the draft. When there was talk about what are the Fighters going to do with this guy.
Right. So I guess it's up to you and me to throw in our combined 4 cents. And, okay. You know, I look at it this way. No matter how this saga kind of plays out, I think Ohtani is kind of taking a hit. But his Q rating is going up, but he's got a shiner on his pristine image. Now, you know, given that, I think black eyes heal and they go away and they're pretty much completely undetectable over time. So I think he can recover from this, but that's only if this probe finds that there's no evidence against him and he can recover, which he can do by playing well. But as for Ipe Mizuhara, he's a guy, you know, I never use the interpreters. I don't think you use the interpreters. I barely even know them here in Japan, especially since I took this job. I have no idea what their names are.
Yeah, I know.
I know what they look like.
But the Fighters guys were always so nice and friendly. You know, I mean, it's like Hideo Nomo's son, you know, yes, came up and said hi. And,
yeah.
There's a few of them. In fact, Alex Dickerson with the Shinichi Dragons, his interpreter came up and introduced himself to me the other day. So,
who's that?
You know, it does happen. A guy named Soma, first name Soma. I remember that because Soma is also a common family name. So.
Oh, okay, yeah. So, I you know, I had seen Ipe when he was here. I mean, he was basically in charge of handling the foreign players, and I never needed an interpreter to talk to Brandon Laird, so I never talked to him. So I didn't know him, although I saw him, and I knew the guy Leo. I can't remember. I mean, he was first
with SoftBank,
but he was first with the Bay Stars, and then he went to SoftBank. And that's because I did an interview with a Spanish speaker years and years ago, and he helped out with that. So I don't really know what Ipe is like or anything like that. All I can say is the U.S. media went nuts. And I kind of understand that the ESPN story that was about to publish and Mizuhara's story changing like it did could appear suspicious, murky, shady, whatever word you want to
insert.
It sure did. And because it could look like, oh, wait a minute, I wasn't supposed to say that. I'm going to take the fall, you know.
Exactly. Exactly. Superficially, it looked 100% like he told the truth and then he learned that he wasn't supposed to tell the truth.
Right. And I subsequently, it was Tisha Thompson. I watched an interview with her actually early this morning on the Rich Eisen show, and in which she said there was a third party listening to his comments at the time that he made them, representing either the team or Ohtani or somebody, but somebody involved, you know, not with the Dodgers per se. So to me, that, I mean, anyone who, like, I've been in media scrums with Ohtani, saw him a few times, talked to him a little bit at an all-star game at Chiba once. But if there's anything that I have ascertained from distance about him is that Ohtani knows his place in history. This is a man who has been in the spotlight for more years than Mizuhara has been gambling, probably. So for him to risk his future and his career and everything to get involved with gambling, it really doesn't jibe with what he has done up to this time. Including, you know, him writing down how his life was going to play out and at what age he wanted to do things. It doesn't fit in there. So I'm not saying he's innocent or guilty. We'll let the facts play out and we'll find out what's going on. I don't know the man, but I just know that gambling is an addiction and it's an illness, and those afflicted with it do anything
I just would say that gambling is not an illness, but gambling addiction is an illness. Yeah.
Okay. What I said, but okay. And the people who are afflicted with it, they'll do anything to hide it. And one of the things you wouldn't do to hide your gambling addiction is leave an electronic trail like the one that was left. The people who try to hide it are the ones coming back and making excuses in the aftermath of being caught. So I don't know. It was just a clumsy and desperate kind of, it smacked of clumsiness and and the mm-hmm. kind of desperate housewife kind of a story situation that Mizuhara involved himself in. But again, we don't know, and nobody has been charged yet. That's the thing. And I told my wife on day one, I'm like, well, this is a crime. So somebody might be going to jail. I don't know, but we'll just let the whole thing play out. Hopefully he didn't gamble. He said he didn't gamble. Mizuhara said he did gamble. So there has to be some proof. And the way forensics work these days, there has to be evidence all over the room, so to speak. So I expect we'll get some action happening in this fairly soon.
Yeah, I would say, yeah, I'll stick. My knowledge of Ippei Mizuhara is he's a fairly ordinary guy with extremely good language skills. And he does have a tendency to be ordinary to being, he can, you know, make jokes at people's expense, particularly mine. and be funny. And he knows Ohtani really well, and Ohtani's depended on him. Okay, so that's what I know about him, period. I knew his father was a cook in L.A. He grew up, spent most of his life growing up in L.A. And after that, I don't know. We do know, we heard from his high school soccer coach, who said he was a really hard worker on the field, incredibly dedicated to practice and doing things right on the field. His story gets murky after that. His media guides reported that he went to a university that he never attended, apparently.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but all that being said, okay, so that's one thing we know. His resume was not accurate, which is, as a couple of people, like Japanese people I've talked to, it's not all that unusual in Japan, because, you know, one could see if he needed a job as an interpreter, that he should put that he went to a university, even if the school he went to was one that trained you to work in a casino. Which is apparently where he was studying, at like a vocational school to teach him about how to work in casino operations. That's one story. But okay, so leaving aside that, going back to Ohtani, what we have is, and I'm going to address this in a blog I need to write, the two questions about Ohtani are, first of all, as John said, there's an electronic trail. So we're going to know exactly who authorized the transfers.
No, I doubt that. Because
No, we will, because electronically, whoever was in control of that account was the person who authorized the transfers. Now, hold on a second.
I gotta get in here.
Job.
I mean,
it's my job.
You
to
never stop.
You,
yeah, but you never stop.
I hadn't finished. I hadn't finished.
That never stopped you before when I was talking. Go ahead.
I'm Go saying ahead. That if Mizuhara had control of the account, which I absolutely believe, there will be an electronic trail that said who authorized the transfers. And of course, it's Ohtani's name is on the account. So that's all we know. But we haven't heard any of that forensics yet. Okay? Are we clear on that?
All right. What I would throw back at you here is that I've spent some off time with some of these ball players, and when mm-hmm. they come over here to Japan and they can't read a lot of stuff and they can't do a lot of stuff, they give their team representative, whether that's an interpreter or whomever it might be, all kinds of access because they can't deal with it.
Correct.
And it wouldn't be very surprising at all to know that all these passwords and all these things that were set up, if they were set up, if Mizuhara helped Ohtani do it, that he
absolutely.
And so the forensics you're talking about are who authorized it, but there's a lot of, now you only need to click, and once you're logged in, you can stay logged in, and once you're in a certain place, you know, if your computer is being used and you're in a different place, you know, you need to have proof that you're in a different place.
Right.
And that's the only way you can get. Otherwise, authorization is not a.
But when you're transferring more than $10,000, banks get nosy.
They should.
They do, pretty much. Yeah. Okay. So what I'm saying is it had to have been an official. I'm saying that in order for this to have gone down the way Ohtani says it went down, Mizuhara had to be able to transfer hundreds of thousands of dollars in Ohtani's names with no questions being asked.
Correct.
Okay, and I'm not saying that's impossible. I'm saying that's very possible and very probable.
Okay.
But what I'm saying is they would know, the banks will know this. They will not know that it's Mizuhara. Okay, they won't know that it was Mizuhara running the show, but Ohtani would.
Okay.
But yes. I'm saying, so Ohtani's name will be on it. Okay, so that's one thing we need to know. And one thing that Ohtani has not explained is, as you said, you've seen the way things work in interpreters. And if we've seen how Ohtani's life has been basically dependent on having Ipe as his life manager. So to us, it makes perfect sense. This is a guy who, you know, when he says, buy my new teammate's wife a car. Yeah. He didn't go to the bank and get a cashier's check.
Joe Kelly.
He told Ipe, here's the dealer. This is the car I want. Buy it. Okay. So that part is plausible. But what we don't know, there is another possibility that Ipe was sending these payments and Ohtani did know about it. That is possible.
Sure.
Okay. He said he didn't, but there's no proof of that. There'll never be any proof of that except Ohtani and Mizuhara. Okay. And the other thing, which is, of course, the question for what Ohtani hasn't answered, is the first one that we addressed, which is everybody in America is going, how can this guy do all this money without 100 red flags going up all around the thing? And you know, Ohtani's agent had, and his agent's attorneys and their accountants had to be saying, you have to have a better system than the one you've got.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so Ohtani is basically faced with a situation where he can admit being a moron.
Sure. Or having too much money.
Right. No, he can admit being a moron for not taking care, putting all his trust in a single person who he's trusted all this time. And the other one is, we don't know if he's telling the truth about this other thing. Of course, people are thinking, oh, he should have been, because the paper trail is not, we don't know about the trail. We're just taking everything on Ohtani's word, or at least people are saying, well, that's his story. And if that's the case, they're going, well, there should be forensic evidence, but since we haven't seen it, we can't guess. The bookmaker said, I don't know who Ohtani was. Well, everything about it is a little off. So right. My guess is there is something to this story that somebody is hiding. And my guess is the biggest thing is that Ohtani's a dummy. My guess is his attorney, his agent, Nez Bolelo, his agent's company, their accountants, their attorneys all said to Ohtani over and over until he told them, will you shut up about my money? Because that's the only way this story makes sense. And now they're hesitant to say, well, we tried to tell him, but he was too stupid. for the greatest human being who ever lived, he was too much of a good friend.
Yeah, naive, trusting.
Naive, yeah.
We know what you mean.
But I think that's where this story is going, is to the degree to which Ohtani was careless with that side of his life, and that story completely fits in with the picture of somebody who is just interested in baseball, who's trusting of a very few people, but completely trusting of a very few people, very private, doesn't want other people in. Makes sense, but his agents are now going, don't make our guy look worse than he is.
Yeah, when you're an inner circle piece like that, it has turned into Brutus with Julius Caesar, then you got trouble. You got trouble. We'll end it there, but we have to see how this plays out. So I don't want to make any judgments, but the way he's hitting right now, Ohtani, the way he's swinging the bat, I mean, he's getting the singles, he's trying to concentrate, but it has to be weighing on his mind. It has to be really
even just like a complete change in his life, in how everyday play has played out for the last 6 years.
Well, he's got a wife now, and she'll be taking care of all that stuff. So don't worry about it.
She's busy taking care of the dog.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
That's her. I think that was her principal responsibility. My first thought when she got the wife was, oh, now we know who's going to look after the dog.
Well, geez, you know, if I lose like 10,000 yen, my wife is upset. So I don't know how he's going to take this story, how he took this story to his wife. honey, I dropped some money. Something, whatever it happened. All right, we got to go. We will be back next week. Jim has an interview on deck. I have an interview on deck, and we're going out to get more. So take that. We will have lots of interviews for you. In the meantime, we would like to hear from you. So please hit us up at JBW Podcast on twitter.com/X with the hashtag High Heat. Send us questions by email to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Look for us on the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. We are on iTunes and Google Podcasts, so check us out. Subscribe, like, and leave us a comment on that as well. We will talk to you next week. Enjoy your baseball.
See you at the ballparks for real.
Follow the hosts on Twitter at JBW Podcast and at JBallAllen. And feel free to submit your questions by email or tweet with hashtag High Heat. Thank you for listening to Japan Baseball Weekly.